You know, it'd be very similar, but you make those decisions based on how much work you get. You know, so we got to get through training camp. We got to get to a certain point to see the work that we got. We got to get to a certain point with our joint practice to see what we can get there. We got to get to that scrimmage that we have and we're doing it ourselves to see the work that you get there. You got to really be able to apply those things and take along those metrics on how much work you can get, how much competitive edge you can get, how much competitive work you can get to make those decisions. So, like, we're a little far away from making those decisions yet, but obviously, you know, the philosophy, you know, anything we can do to mitigate as many injuries we can based on the work that we're able to get from the practice standpoint to determine what we need from the games.
That from Falcons head coach Raheem Morris. He's getting us ready, guys. He's getting us ready to get frustrated again when we don't see starters play in the preseason. Now, what is the actual impact that preseason reps have on the regular season? I don't think there is any sort of real, tangible research to show one way or another. It just, obviously, you and I have this brain that thinks, hey, when you can see your guys who have not had a lot of reps play in the preseason, it feels like that would be a good thing. Because at any point you can get injured, whether it's in a game or whether it's in practice, as we've already seen with wide receiver Darnell Mooney this past week in training camp. But we're going to go out to the WadeForward.com hotline, bring in our Falcons reporter, Joe Patrick. Of course, you can follow, as always, on social media at JAPatrick200. Joe, how you doing on this Saturday, man?
Caleb, I'm doing good. You know, we had talked about doing this hit, when was it, yesterday or so, and I asked you to text me to remind me, which you did. I, of course, came back from training camp today and just passed out because I was, like, tired and just woke up, like, 6 minutes ago. So I totally missed your reminder text, which I appreciate you sending me for no reason, as it turned out. And I'm on 6 minutes of having been awake, so we'll see how this goes.
All right. So it's time to pull out all the trivia questions that you've seen over the last, like, what happened?
Like, what's the Mr. Krabs meme, like, with, like, the world is spinning around him right now?
Yeah. Well, look, here's the thing. Will I take you, Joe Patrick, on 6 minutes of being awake? Or what I had in my last show, which was both the guests that I had decided to take phone calls, like, next to the road. And so I'm trying to talk to someone who was like, yeah, well, I will allow your brain to adjust for a mere moment. But we'll get things underway. I want to ask you, though, Joe, as I played that cut from Raheem Morris, and this is kind of, I'm sure you didn't make up your stance one way or another today. You've probably had your own opinion on how these sorts of things work. But knowing Raheem Morris's preseason philosophy, which is we're not throwing our starters out there. This is purely, it feels like I'm playing guys because we have these games and we have to put bodies out there. And most of my decision making is going to come from those joint practices and training camp sessions. Is there any thought for you, like, are you on board with that, or do you feel like, hey, coach, maybe based on what we've seen in the past that you need to alter those sorts of things? Like, do you go one way or the other?
I mean, I don't have, like, a personal philosophy on it, you know, but I will say that I personally want to see starters play generally because I'm a football fan.
Sure.
the selfish person in me just, like, literally just, I just want to see the starters out there. It's more interesting. It's more entertaining. And I understand why that I sometimes have to wait until the regular season for that to happen. And I think if you look back to the last preseason, you see a really good reason why. This is kind of the philosophy. They lost two players in, I believe it was that opening preseason game against the Dolphins for the season, in DeMarco Hellams and Braylon Trice, just after not much play at all. So you understand it from that respect. However, having said that, you know, like you were just saying, I believe not the DeMarco Hellams one, but the Braylon Trice one was pretty much non-contact, and, you know, that could happen really at any time. But to Raheem's point, I think, like, in practice, you are able to do some things in order to kind of control the situation to potentially prevent some injury situations. I think another big thing, especially when it comes to the quarterbacks, is the offensive lines. Like, is your entire offensive line ready and able to play, which they may not be? You may prefer to, you know, keep a tackle out, like a veteran like Jake Matthews or something like that. And if that's the case, you know, how foolish would a coach look if his quarterback ends up getting blindsided or something because the backup offensive lineman is in and gets beaten by potentially, you know, like a starter and starting defensive player, and so et cetera, et cetera. That kind of filters down. So those, I think, are some of the real reasons why we just don't see players start, is because you have some of these effects that kind of trickle through. But I, you know, again, not that I'm getting my hopes up for it, I hope we see it. But the second he said, you know, it's going to be a very similar philosophy, then that's the moment I said, yep, it's going to be the exact same thing as last year.
Yeah, Joe, I think I'm always one that I understand erring on the side of caution. However, my next question for you kind of follows up with the thought of you could get injured at any point, as did Darnell Mooney this past week, who is going to, as the reports have been out there, miss several weeks as he's going to be away from the team. And it feels like that this Mooney loss is somewhat significant. At least the way I'm looking at it, he's wide receiver 2 right now, coming in the mix with the rest of these guys, obviously behind Drake London. What do you know as far as how significant this potential or this shoulder injury is, and how do you think this affects his start of the season and the impact that he can make?
Well, hopefully it doesn't affect it too much. I mean, we know that he is a productive receiver in this scheme and clearly knows the scheme very well based on what he did last year. As far as what I know about the injury, it's nothing, you know, too different than what everybody else knows. I was also informed by a Falcons communications spokesperson last night that he was going to be out for a few weeks, and that would basically assume that he is going to be back before the season starts. But, you know, TBD, we'll see how the recovery process goes. Having said that, I saw him out. He was out there on the field today with his team, just obviously not dressed out, not practicing, and he won't be, but he was out there. He wasn't in a sling or anything, that seems good. He was in a jacket, so there could have been he could have had some sort of brace on or something underneath that wasn't so visible, and so that it's not so obvious, but he looked, you know, generally okay to me when he was out there. Looked pretty normal walking around and everything. And I did see the injury happen yesterday. It happened kind of right in front of me. And I remember, it was so funny, when it happened, I'm standing right next to Josh Kendall from The Athletic, and Darnell Mooney lays out for this ball, and he kind of, it would have been a fantastic catch. Of course, he kind of catches it while he's laying out for it on a corner route, and then, you know, didn't survive the ground. Neither did his shoulder, really, apparently. But I turned to Josh right away. I go, man, I don't know how these guys do this, because I would be down for the count if I would, like, hit the ground that hard, basically. And because at the time, he kind of, you know, was down for a little bit, but then, you know, I had a teammate reach out his hand, he pulled it, and he got himself up, and he kind of ran back to the huddle. So I figured he was more or less okay. It turned out, you know, obviously he did suffer an injury there, but it was a pretty big impact. I just tell that story to say that, like, you know, even at the time, I thought, damn, that was tough. And they were not wearing pads, you know, they were just in helmets. Yeah. So I do wonder about that as well. I worry about guys kind of maybe going a little bit too, like, all out and aggressive when they don't have the padding on. So I do wonder if he had shoulder pads on, if that would have kind of blunted the blow from when he hit the ground. But ultimately, it doesn't seem like it's all too big of an injury. And hopefully he's ready for the first game of the season.
Well, yeah.
It's going to be a big game. You know, it's important that he's back in time for that Buccaneers game.
For sure. Well, and to your point of what you were talking about with the no pads thing, that was my immediate thought of hearing how this play went down. Is I was thinking, hey, like, I feel like OTAs and training camp, I'm not diving for a ball if I'm not wearing pads, because as we just saw with Treylon Burks earlier today, he broke his collarbone at Titans training camp trying to one-handed grab a pass. And I'm thinking, I get it. It's your, this is still an entertainment product. We talked earlier about preseason and why we want to see guys out there. But, you know, keeping in mind of you want to be available for the regular season, I'm thinking, hey, maybe we just let that one go and we'll catch the next one.
And I would also note that this play, like, it was a deep ball and it was going towards the hill. So, like, you know, it was kind of like, you know, not in the end zone, but near the end zone of in front of where the fans were. So I wonder if, you know, maybe that, you know, you want to entertain the fans and stuff. You kind of, make this diving attempt. And then also, I just wonder if maybe in the future coaches might, like, think twice about, you know, there are certain rules about how often they can, when they can be in shoulder pads, et cetera, but you do wonder if maybe having the shoulder pads on would help some of these guys and prevent some of these types of injuries.
Well, Joe, we learned after the injury that the Falcons have signed DJ Chark, who had his fun moment with, I remember a couple years ago with the Baby Shark song that he had that wings with the Jaguars. And that feels like the most memorable thing that he's done in the last few seasons, quite honestly. Because he dealt with what it was. I think it was a hip injury and a groin injury last year with the Chargers. He has been brought in by the Falcons. What do you kind of see as his impact on this version of this Falcons team? Is this just a body to be towards the bottom of the wide receivers along with like the Casey Washingtons and the likes? Or is this someone competing for kind of a higher up wide receiver type role?
No, for me, this is a he's just another person competing for a job on the team, you know, like in any fashion that comes, whether it is as a receiver, whether, like anyone else that's fighting for roles, you know, you're going to have to probably show that you have some functionality on special teams in some capacity. So I think that's kind of the situation he's in. You know, he is kind of a name because Baby Shark.
Yeah. He showed out for the Jaguars, you know.
and the fact that he was a second round pick, you know, he is prestigious and everything, but that godforsaken song, man. Anyway, sorry, I can't get past that. I mean, and people know who he is, generally speaking. But ultimately, I do think that this is a pretty settled wide receiver room. And I think, frankly, there's a reason why he was still available. There's a reason he's bounced around some teams already to this point in his career. And, you know, he would have to fight for a spot. And it's already a receiver room where I think we thought there was going to be a lot of competition, because at the bottom of that room, we'll call it the bottom of the room, you got like guys like Casey Washington, you know, et cetera. And then also some, you know, Nick Nosh, who was like a very highly touted UDFA from this most recent class. So you already had some competition with some younger players there who the Falcons kind of know a little bit better because they've been in the system a little bit longer. But, you know, they had already had this workout scheduled with DJ Chark for Friday afternoon prior to them even you know, realize they basically had the workout scheduled before the injury even happened to Darnell Mooney. So clearly he was kind of on their radar before even any of this went down. So it could be fortuitous timing.
Last one for you, Joe. I was surprised by this. I feel like I tried to, while I was on vacation, stay completely away from the sports world. And it was pretty glorious. It felt really nice, but I stepped back. And then I'm trying to catch up on things that are going on with the Falcons, and I see Kevin King's been released. I thought that he was going to be a pretty big part of this secondary as far as rotationally for the Falcons coming into this season. What happened there, and what's your confidence level in this Falcons secondary right now?
Yeah, you know, I think what happens sometimes with some of these players, I mean, I agree. I mean, I was surprised to see it because – you know, I wouldn't have like slotted him in anything, but certainly I would have thought that he would have been in contention to be one of those kinds of versatile defensive back pieces who can kind of be the last guy on the roster who you can kind of slide into a bunch of different defensive roles if you need him, if you need to dress him out, you know, for a given game. I think sometimes, especially with these veterans, when the team kind of understands that they want to move on or they have other pieces, and obviously the Falcons have some young pieces in Billy Bowman and Xavier Watts who they've drafted who are those safeties slash, you know, inside corners, nickel corner types, if they know that they have the options that they're going to want to prefer to go with, I think sometimes with these veteran players, they just say, hey, listen, they just kind of cut to the chase with them, and they don't kind of put them through because they want to give them an opportunity to make a football team elsewhere. And if they kind of know that it's not going to be here at this point, there's not really a huge reason for, you know, making them go on. And I'm just kind of speculating here.
Sure.
There is also the possibility that, you know, maybe it's more on Kevin. Well, he was cut. He didn't leave on his own accord. But, you know, it's worth noting that, like, Kevin King had been out of football basically for a year before the Falcons brought him into the fold last year to try to make the team. So there are some of those some circumstances there that we aren't kind of fully aware of. But I'm with you that I was also surprised, but I think that it basically means that the Falcons kind of didn't really just see him as being part of the picture for this team at this time going forward.
That is Joe Patchak, our Falcons 92.9 The Game reporter. You can follow him on social media at JAPatrick200. Joe, I feel like I deserve a pat on the back. I made it through an entire interview, and I did not bring up Kirk Cousins. Or, well, I think I might have mentioned Kyle Pitts, but I certainly didn't ask you about either one of those. And I feel like these days, that is quite the accomplishment.
Yeah, no doubt. I appreciate that very much.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon, bud.
All right. Thanks, Caleb. Appreciate it, man.
On the other side of the break, the final first-round pick of the 2025 NFL Draft was signed. He finally signed a contract. What made it happen? We'll talk about it next in some NFL news right here on the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on this Saturday afternoon. Going about for another hour, essentially. Going until 6:30. Pre-game will start at 6:30 for Atlanta United and the Seattle Sounders. We'll talk with Jason Longshore coming up at 5:40 on the show. Get his thoughts on what it's going to take for the Five Stripes to get a win, and also what he thinks about this whole deal that went on with Inter Miami's Lionel Messi getting suspended by the league for not participating in the MLS All-Star Game. Certainly drama going on in that league and drama going on in the NFL. And you know what's nice? You know what's really nice for the Falcons to not be involved in drama? Because, sure, you can say that the Kirk Cousins thing is still going on, but it's not really drama that's involving the locker room or anything like that. Like, this is just, it's a storyline that we'll talk about as media, but doesn't at the end of the day really affect the locker room that much until it reaches a point where the Falcons eventually trade Kirk and he goes on his way, and then the Falcons will have to replace him and all that sort of thing. But outside of that, no real drama going on with the Atlanta Falcons this training camp, and it's really, 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 really nice to have. As on the flip side, the Cincinnati Bengals, man, the drama going on with that team right now is fascinating. It is fascinating to see an NFL franchise who everyone already speaks about relatively poorly. Like, there aren't many people who have positive things to say about the Cincinnati Bengals outside of good players that they have, your Joe Burrows and the likes, because of the way they manage their players. Like, it's one thing to be cheap, and then it's another to be cheap in the way that the Cincinnati Bengals are constantly discussed as. So I was shocked, quite honestly, to see the Shamar Stewart news come out yesterday And it became official literally, I think, 3 minutes ago. I got the tweet from Ian Rappaport and from Adam Schefter that the Cincinnati Bengals officially signed their 17th overall pick in the first round this year out of Texas A&M, defensive end Shamar Stewart. And why has he been discussed for the last couple of months at this point as being someone who had not yet signed? Because of this whole clause that the Bengals were trying to introduce into their contracts of that they could void guaranteed money for quote-unquote detrimental conduct. Now, I'm sure it was explained more in the contract language, but it sure seemed like from all the reports that this was very general language that could be taken a lot of different ways that would give the Bengals a lot of power to void Shamar's contract for what they could determine as detrimental conduct. Does he get a speeding ticket that causes him to miss practice, and then it's a, hey, we don't have to pay you your money? He gets arrested for something that was a misunderstanding, but because it was an arrest, it gets voided because it was conduct detrimental. All of these sorts of things was a big reason why Shamar did not want to sign it. And so when I saw that Shamar had finally signed a fully guaranteed 4-year, $19 million contract, the first thing that I went through in all of these articles was to look for, hey, did the Bengals get their conduct detrimental verbiage in the contract, or did Shamar get that out? And what I saw initially was Shamar won this by getting the conduct detrimental verbiage changed. And I think that's an interesting distinction, because apparently the Bengals did not get rid of the language that they initially put in Shamar's contract, that it's been talked about. Other NFL teams have this, but you never want to be the first player that has more restrictive language in your contract than the previous guys. And that's why do guys fight for this sort of thing? Because the classic, you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. This is classic negotiations when it comes to contracts. And so I found it interesting that the Bengals did not entirely remove the detrimental conduct clause that they had, but they softened the language apparently, and, shocker, included more guaranteed money in order to do this. So apparently Shamar was due to get some of this guaranteed money later in like December, and he's going to get more of it up front as he essentially he gets more money up front so that they can have this language that goes on further in their contract. And this is going to be looked at as a win-win for both sides, because the Bengals get their player, Shamar gets his contract. But make no mistake, like, the Bengals softening the language but still getting it in there, this is a win for the Bengals as they try to introduce more restrictive language in their contracts moving forward. I find it really interesting to see what happens next with Trey Hendrickson, as he is clearly the next venture that they turn to after dealing with Shamar Stewart, which they were always going to get it done with Shamar Stewart, at least I believe, rather than this whole idea that, oh, he was going to sit out and enter the draft next year. I think a lot of people misunderstood the fact that, like, he was practicing with Texas A&M in this summer period, but he can't actually go play football for Texas A&M again, because my understanding of the difference in an agent you can have in college and then an agent after you declare for the NFL draft, is looked at differently. And so his eligibility for college was gone, but he could have sat out and returned next year. I just didn't ever think that that was ever going to happen because he was not going to be making any kind of NIL money at Texas A&M. And so it was always going to be best for him to sign now and get some guaranteed money. But waiting out, clearly the Bengals made some concessions, and then Shamar Stewart and his camp and his agent were able to make some concessions in order to get this. Trey Hendrickson, he posted earlier, I think it was on Instagram, like yesterday, the day before. He's in Florida. So very interested to see how long it takes them to work out something with Hendrickson, or if they end up trading him. And then that turns into the next set of drama happening in the NFL right now, which goes along with this contract verbiage, which is Christian Wilkins with the Raiders, a guy who signed a $50 million deal just a year ago and has a fracture in his foot that causes him to miss a significant time last year. And then the Raiders pop up with Pete Carroll and this new regime that they have, and they cut Christian Wilkins and are trying to avoid paying him $35 million worth of guaranteed money that is now causing the NFLPA to have to get involved. And if you hadn't been paying attention, the NFLPA kind of busy right now with their own drama and their own president who, may or may not have been doing some really weird money spending that caused him to resign from his role. That caused, like, all of the mess going on with the NFLPA right now is really fascinating. And shout out to Pablo Torre for all of the investigations that he's done. As I know, he kind of, for a lot of people, gets looked at as gimmicky and kind of a joke thing on his podcast as he uncovers some of the maybe less serious, interesting things in sports. He was very involved with everything that was going on with Bill Belichick and his girlfriend, and a lot of people got annoyed with him at that. But this is some really serious stuff that Pablo Torre on his podcast investigated, and it's led to guys resigning from their position and them investigating whether there was improper use of funds. We also learned that guys' associations with weird numbers and all this sorts of thing. It's very fascinating. If you look up, I know The Athletic has done a story. Pablo Torre has investigated all the strange stuff that's gone on with the NFLPA as of lately. But they've got they're pretty busy right now with all they have going on. And then you add this Christian Wilkins grievance that's happening. That I did learn there is an injury grievance that you can file and then a non-injury grievance. I just assumed that Christian Wilkins would be filing a non-injury grievance an injury grievance because it was related to this foot injury that he suffered that apparently the Raiders told him he needed to have a second surgery on, and he decided not to have the second surgery earlier this year. And is still not yet, you know, anywhere ready for camp. And so because of the disagreements amongst the, you know, kind of the course of action that he should have, the Raiders cutting bait here and now have opened this thing up to where a lot of teams are going to be certainly interested. And I think the Falcons should certainly be interested in Christian Wilkins. You go through your medicals. If he fails your medicals, okay, then you go on about your business. And, don't worry about it if he's not healthy and if his kind of side of the story doesn't match up with what you think should have happened. You have to trust your medical team if you're the Falcons or any NFL team and kind of invest. But you got to kick the tires. You certainly have to kick the tires on a talented guy like Christian Wilkins. But this is just a bizarre sort of situation that it's easy for me to take Wilkins' side just because it is the Raiders after all. And I mean, they have not exactly been involved with the most above board business practices in the past. However, on the flip side of that, they did go after Antonio Brown, and that whole thing clearly seemed to be on Antonio's side of being a difficult person and his foot injury rehab and freezing it by getting a cryo chamber therapy thing. Like, just interesting to see how this is going to play out with Christian Wilkins and whether he's a viable option. Somebody's going to sign him. Somebody's going to absolutely take the risk of signing him, and it's just going to be interesting to see whether or not the Falcons are amongst that list. If not, whether they have the money in order to make it happen and all that sort of thing. It's going to be fascinating. You had more injuries happen today. I mentioned it with Joe Patrick earlier. Treylon Burks, wide receiver for the Titans, fractured his collarbone today, going for a one-handed grab that he fell to the ground in their stadium practice. So a lot of fans in attendance to see Treylon Burks fracture his collarbone, be out for a significant time. And it's an interesting time in the NFL as training camp is underway. And look, injuries happen, storylines get advanced, and we'll keep you updated, of course, as always, here on the Dopey Millennial Show. But when we get back, Jason Longshore, our 92.9 of the Game Atlanta United analyst, keeps us updated on what's going on with the Five Stripes and what's going on with this whole Lionel Messi deal. We'll talk about it next. Caleb Johnson here with you, Sports Radio, 92.9 of the Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on this Saturday. In about an hour, a little less than an hour, you'll have Atlanta United pregame getting you ready for the Five Stripes taking on the Seattle Sounders. And the man who will be a part of that call, 7:30, is our own Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst. Jason, how you doing this Saturday, man?
Doing well. Excited for a matchup that we don't honestly get to see all that often with Seattle making the long trip.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I was just in Seattle. I went out there and got to visit for about a week, and I was getting ready. When I looked at the schedule, seeing the Five Stripes playing Seattle, I was going to be like, oh, like, what places are you going to visit? And then I quickly realized, I was like, oh, it's a home match. But certainly a team that you don't get to see very often. And I'm going to take it a step further. A kit that you don't see very often, as Atlanta United is going to be wearing some special numbers for pediatric illness. A patient, Alejandro, who is kind of a part of a deal that they're doing. And for me, making connections that aren't really there, but Atlanta's Chase Elliott just won a race in Atlanta where he had kind of a special cancer patient homage on his car. And I'm thinking, hey, maybe the Five Stripes getting some extra special juju can kind of propel them towards a win. So, like, something that I feel like we've been talking about for weeks at this point. Jason, what's it going to take to get a win?
It's something that's really cool. I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's something that the club takes really seriously. And when we've had a chance to talk to players about, you know, kind of the why do they take so much time? I mean, Brad Gazan does so much with Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, and, you know, obviously the partnership, and we know Arthur Blank and his family of businesses and how seriously they take community. You know, these things are important when you're in a spot where Atlanta United is right now, and they're struggling on the field. And look, it can get real negative in terms of in the locker room. It can get real negative in terms of how this team feels about itself, how players feel about themselves individually. And these types of community projects can help snap them out of it and help them realize, like, you know, a little bit of who they are and what kind of power they have, and can help give you that extra little dose of reality, I think is what it is. And that's what Atlanta United needs right now. I mean, this is a team that I feel like we've talked about it a lot this season, that they have struggled for confidence. They have struggled mentally. They've struggled with adversity. When things have gone against them in matches, they've usually had negative reactions to it. these are the things that have to change. And alongside the work in the community, I think you're seeing changes to the roster unfold in front of us now that the transfer window is open. And you have Anaya Mihai at center back. He's available tonight. We'll see how long he can go. In terms of fitness, he's pretty good in terms of just individual personal fitness. He's been working out, had a plan sent over from the club of what he can do. But there's a difference between gym fitness and soccer fitness, and he hasn't played in quite a while. So where he is will determine how many minutes he can play, and hopefully he'll get up to speed pretty quickly in that front. You've got another center back who just announced yesterday. You've got all kinds of rumors and things going on, and you've got guys going out as well. Those shakeups can be another dose of reality for a locker room that probably needs it in terms of this season, but also I think as you start to unfortunately have to look ahead to what 2026 is.
Yeah, Jason, you know, you mentioned there a couple of new guys coming in. It feels like improving this defense is certainly something that Atlanta would want to do. What do you think about the Miha, the Barakal kind of coming in here and being available? What is it that, I guess, their skill set that can positively impact this team other than just them being fresh new bodies in here?
I think with Barakal, it's a little bit of the experience that he has in Spain, and we haven't seen him yet on a field here in Atlanta. So I can't speak to it firsthand yet, but seeing the highlights, knowing what kind of center backs that are typically produced in Spain, you're talking about somebody who's going to be good on the ball. You're talking about somebody who's going to be very technical and be able to handle those moments. And you combine that with the experience that he has, and you should have a player who can play out of the back and keep possession the way that Ronnie Dyla wants. We have seen that with an Anaya Mihai this week in training and had a chance to talk to him a little bit on Tuesday. I really liked a few of his answers that I didn't necessarily see coming in the way that they did. He's coming off of a really good year last year in the Portuguese First Division. He said it was one of the best years in his career that he's had. He talked about how being a captain for his former club kind of made him understand responsibility and what it means to lead. And the way he put it in the sense of, you know, as a leader, he wanted to be in the background when things were going well, but stand up front when things weren't and take that responsibility on. I like to hear those sorts of things from a player coming into the situation. And he talked about what it means to represent his country, Albania. And, you know, you're going to have matches this fall that he's going to be back and forth to. He comes here to try to improve his game to be better in national team situations as well. He sees this as a ambitious move coming from the Portuguese First Division to Major League Soccer. And just seeing him on the field, his range of passing is what jumped out to me. He hit a long diagonal yesterday from one sideline to the opposite. And it wasn't full field, but a long diagonal right on the left foot of Pedro Amador. So it's not even just that it's perfectly delivered. It's even more perfectly delivered because it's onto Pedro Amador's favored foot. It's those sorts of little details that I like from what I've seen so far in a very short training stint this week with Anaya Mihai. But I think he's going to bring you a different kind of personality in the back.
Dare I say some optimism when it comes to the five stripes as we talk with Jason Longshore on the WadeForward.com hotline. Jason, you mentioned Ronnie Dyla there, and I'm interested as we've kind of seen him throughout the season, just the different players that he's kind of dealt with, and as he meshes his philosophies with the players that he has, how much closer are we to those two, like hit Dyla's philosophies and getting the types of players that he needs in order to make that happen? How much closer are we to those two things kind of coinciding and finding some success? Like, it's going to kind of have to wait until 2026 to really come together? Or is that, you know, I guess that timeline closer than we may realize?
It's probably somewhere in between. You know, talking to him this week, I think he is feeling better about the way the team is playing in his game model, to talk about that side of it, the not the individual tactics game to game. Tactics change based off your opponent, what you want to exploit and what you maybe want to protect. But the overall game model of how you want to be, the principles of play of how you want to play, I think he struggled at first because I don't know if he necessarily had the players to do everything that he wanted to do. And I think he tried to find something, a compromise that he could still use the principles that he wants the team to play with, but maybe match to what his players could or couldn't do. And it didn't work either. So I think now, look, you're seeing the next plan, which is some players are going to have to change. And he's going to have to get some guys in who can play the way that he wants to have this team fully reach its full potential. And you know, we see this with coaches where you come in, and remember when he came in December, you had a somewhat established team. You added Latte Lott and Miguel Almiron on top of it. But you had a group that was kind of what it was before he got here. And now I think in this window, and I'll put Chris Henderson into this conversation as well as the sporting director, because he came right at the same time. I think you have two guys that have a very clear vision of what they want this team to look like on the field and what kinds of players they need to play that way. And I'd say that the assessment is that some of the players that they have had can't allow them to play that way. So they're going to have to make changes and go add some pieces in this window and in the offseason window to fully realize it. But Ronnie was positive in terms of the players that he has right now getting the way that he wants to play. Now it's about quality. Now it's about delivering in moments. It's great to create five chances in the first half last week, but one goal is not enough. And you saw it with the way the second half started. When you have advantages, when you have momentum, you got to put teams away. And that's something this team has just not done this year when they have played well. They haven't put games away.
Jason, what's the best course of action in your opinion for how Atlanta should address the rest of the season? Like, is it just the best thing you need to do is go out and win as many matches as possible? Is it putting guys in different positions and kind of seeing what you've got for 2026? Like, what do you kind of see as the best course of action?
I think it's just play the games as they come. I think, you know, with where you are in the league table, you're probably looking at League's Cup as a bit more of an opportunity than maybe you were before, okay, where you were considering you have to go chase a playoff spot. And look, you still can, but the reality is you're 13 points out of a playoff spot right now, and you've got 33 points still available to you. So the math is difficult as you start to look at what that can be. But if you go and you win on Wednesday against Necaxa in League's Cup, and you have a chance to get out of the group stage and go into knockout games and win something and also build momentum, I think you have to take full advantage of that. So I hope that feels like a new lease on life in the League's Cup, and I hope those games have that different feel. Once you get past that, I don't know if you're really looking to play guys in different spots or giving guys kind of auditions, because I think you're going to be adding more pieces. Again, there's rumors, and there's two center backs that are already on the roster coming in. You're going to want to see those center backs play. Any other new faces, you're going to want to see them play. And, yeah, you're going to want to see how they mesh a little bit with some of the guys you already have as you make decisions on what the roster looks like for next year.
Talking with Jason Longshore on the WadeFor.com hotline. Jason, of course, our 9-10 of the game Atlanta United analyst, as well as he's got his own show, The Intersection, that you can listen to here on 92.9 The Game. Jason, this whole drama going on with Lionel Messi and getting suspended after deciding to not be a part of the MLS All-Star Game. I think a lot of people expected him, and as well, I mean, it's not just Messi, it's Jordi Alba as well. What do you make of this one-match suspension? Is this going to be the end of it? Or does the league turn this into a bigger deal? Or do you think we're making, you know, much to do about nothing?
No, this will be the end of it. I mean, it's a rule on the books that you have to enforce. You can't let them get away with it. My frustration with it is Miami, in terms of the sporting side, the soccer side of the organization, head coach Javier Mascherano, they needed to talk to some SEC football coaches. How many times have we heard about a player like, oh, he's got a hamstring. He's got a hamstring. He can't talk to the media this week. He's got a hamstring. Oh, but then he's fine, and he plays well.
Yeah.
You know, you can you could have said after the last game last weekend, you know, he felt something at the very end of it. We're going to have to be really careful with him. Jordi Alba, too, you know, felt something. Got to be really careful with him this week. Because the big picture argument that Miami has is very valid. They've played more games than anybody else this summer. They played four in the Club World Cup. Messi, since coming back from Argentine national team duties, played 90 minutes in every game, and he's been amazing. He probably didn't need to go to Austin to play in an all-star game for 30 minutes. He didn't need to do it, but just, you know what the rule is. Just handle it. A little bit of a hamstring. We just have to be really careful with him. That's all you had to do, and you could have handled it.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head of the thing that I texted Mike Conti about this, of just saying, I'm very confused that they didn't take that route, because that could have solved a lot of these issues. Does this become a bigger deal? Or do you kind of think, like, this is all right, he serves his one-game suspension against Cincinnati, and we're done with this, and we're moving on to other things?
I think that's it, just because, I mean, there's nothing else for the league to do. They've made their statement. Miami made their statement and was very frustrated about things yesterday. That's fine. They just signed one of Messi's best friends in Rodrigo De Paul.
There we go.
They basically call him Messi's bodyguard on the field. So he's not going anywhere. Everybody's fine. He'll sit out this one. And if anything, the rest of the league should probably be very afraid, because angry Messi is not somebody you want to see on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting to see all of that go down, and then the ramifications after the fact. Signing a friend, yeah, that'll kind of schmooze over any sorts of frustration. Last one I've got for you, Jason, is Efraim Morales, a young kind of, budding prospect with the Five Stripes. He gets traded this past week to Montreal, as Atlanta gets up to, what, $800,000general allocation money. What do you see as what went into making this type of a move that I guess some could say, hey, you're giving up on a 21-year-old. Why do you think the Five Stripes made this move?
Because you want to win, and you want to win now, and that's where you're at. And I think it's very frustrating when it gets played on both sides of that argument in the media and the blogs and the podcast, social media, because so many people have criticized, whether it's Morales, whether it was George Campbell in the past, Caleb Wiley in the past, criticized young players when they've made mistakes in games and said, don't play them. They make mistakes. You can't play them. And then the same people get upset when you move on to try to make the team better and bring in a more established player, like the guys we talked about at center back. Efraim Morales was probably going to have to play less and go to the bench when you bring in an Amikai and Juan Barakal. So for Efraim, it's better to go and play. And we saw that play out with George Campbell, who just got the move to England with West Brom. He went to Montreal and played a lot and got a move to Europe out of it. If you want to win, it's very difficult when you're in the stage that Atlanta United is in to rely on young players, because they're going to make mistakes. That's the nature of a young player. You need to win now. That's where Atlanta United is. You need to win games now. And you really can't afford to have those learning mistakes at the moment. And you're trying to bring in established pros. Now, you got to get those right. And these kind of moves, yeah, puts pressure on the guys that you bring in, because they've got to play at a level that is a good bit past what you were already seeing with Efraim Morales. But on paper, an established player with hundreds of games in Europe should be able to deliver better performances and deal with the pressure better than someone with, 12 games at the Major League Soccer level here. So that's where you're at. I don't love it either. Like, from a personal standpoint, I've watched Efraim since he was in the academy. So, like, personally, it's sad, because I have loved his development and loved to see him get the opportunities that he's gotten. But as we all know, this is a business, and you got to win games to keep the business ticking over, and you've got to bring in established players to help you win games. And that's the moves that Atlanta United has decided to make.
or you can be a fan and complain no matter what they do. So
and that's generally how it goes, isn't it?
Certainly is. That is Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst. You can listen to him coming up very shortly as the Five Stripes take on the Seattle Sounders later today. Jason, thank you so much for giving us some of your time on this Saturday, man.
Appreciate it. Be talking to y'all soon.
All right. When we get back, just a couple segments left until we turn things over to pregame for Atlanta United and Seattle. We'll get into a news you can lose right here on the Dopey Millennial Show.